Tezvav Amud Aleph, we're up to the seventh line by the two dots. So the Mishnah said, Avalo Sandal HaMesumar. One of the things that you were not allowed to send on Yontif as a gift is a spiked shoe. So what's the issue? Can everyone just mute themselves if you're not muted? If you're so some background noise. So the Gemara asks, Sandal HaMesumar my time alo. What's the issue with the spiked shoe? Mishum Maisa Shahaya. The Gemara references a famous story, which we actually spoke about back in Masechta Shabbos on Daf Samach. The Gemara has a whole story about how there were a bunch of Jews on Shabbos who were hiding out in a cave from the Romans, and they thought they were being attacked, and they ended up trampling and killing each other because they were all wearing these spiked shoes. So Chazal ended up saying that you can't wear these shoes even during the week because they're a sakana. So the bottom line is that because of that story in Masechta Shabbos, these spiked shoes were outlawed. Amar Abai, Sandal HaMesumar, Asher Lenalo, Umutter Lataltalo. Asher Lenalo, Misha Maisa Shahaya, Umutter Lataltalo, Midiktani, and Mishalchim. De Isal Kadaita, Hasher Lataltalo, Hashta Lataltule, Asher, Mishalchim, Miboya. So Abai notes the following distinction. Yes, you're not allowed to wear these spiked shoes because of the incident we just referenced in Masechta Shabbos. However, you are allowed to carry them. Now, again, what use you use with these spiked shoes if you can't wear them is a different issue. But Lemaisa, you're allowed to carry them. How does Abaye know that you're allowed to carry the spiked shoes on Yontif? Since the Mishnah said that you're not allowed to send them as a gift, the implication is that you are allowed to carry them. Because if you couldn't even carry them, then of course you wouldn't be allowed to send them as a gift. That's like underselling the halacha. So the fact that all the Mishnah said was don't send the spiked shoe as a gift implies that you are allowed to carry it. Okay, then we said Velo Minol Sheinu Tafur, you're also not allowed to send a shoe which is not stitched up, which basically is not a wearable shoe. So the Gemara asks Pshita, what's the chiddush? It's not functional, so it's muktzah. Of course you can't send that on Yontif. The Gemara says, no, lo nitzricha da'af agav denaket mesiche. The chiddush is that even though the shoe is being held together with some pegs, with some things that are holding it together, and it's, you know, you can basically wear it almost like b'shas archak, it doesn't qualify as enough of a connection to really make it a shoe. Then the Mishnah said, Rabbi Huda omer aflo min alavan. Rabbi Huda said, you also can't send a white shoe, as we spoke about yesterday, because all the shoes back then, people only wore black shoes, and a white shoe was basically not considered a fully functional shoe. It needed to be painted black first. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Huda matir b'shachor v'oser b'lovan b'bnesha tzarech beitzas agir. So Rabbi Huda says the reason why you can't send a white shoe on Yontif is because you require some craftsman to come with his lump of chalk to color the shoe black, and that's going to be a problem. Rabbi Yossi oser b'shachor b'bnesha tzarech letzachtzicho. Rabbi Yossi says that even sending a black shoe on Yontif is a problem. Why? Because you have to polish the shoe. The Gemara points out, Velo plige, marki asre, marki asre, ba asre demar, bisra lesachas, ba asre demar, bisra leel. The Gemara notes that there's really no machlokes here. It was just a societal or a communal difference. Basically, in certain locations, in the place where Rabbi Huda lived, so apparently the part of the shoe that required polish, theoretically, was the part of the shoe that was inside that actually faced the sole of your foot. So that part no one really saw, so there was no reason why anyone would polish it. But apparently where Rabbi Yossi lived, so the shoes were more like the way that our shoes are, where you would actually see the outside of the shoe, the part that required polishing. And since there was a chance that people might polish the shoe on Yontif, so that's why Rabbi Yossi said it was usher. So it wasn't really a machlokas, it was just a difference in terms of how the shoe was actually constructed.
Does this fall under the rubric of al tzim nichshol lifnei iver? In other words, why is the onus on the sender and not the receiver? Okay, you send me a shoe, I know I'm not going to...
It's more than that. No, Billy, it's more than that, because the whole issue with the Mishnah we were discussing yesterday about not sending certain things to people on Yontif is that the items are not usable. They're not functional. They're muktza, basically. So the point here is that shoes that are not colored, shoes that are not polished, shoes that are whatever, are basically considered not functional, not wearable, not usable, which means that they're basically muktza. That's really the issue here, yeah. Okay, then the Mishnah told us, Zeh klal kol shenei osin bo b'yantif. The Mishnah said that anything which you can use on Yontif, you're allowed to send as a gift on Yontif. So the Gemara points out, Rav Sheshes, shara lehu l'rabbanon l'shadure tefillin b'yom atava. Rav Sheshes allowed people he allowed rabbis to send the tefillin on Yontif. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Amar le'abai v'anan tenan kol shenei osin bo b'yantif mishalchana. So you're not allowed to wear tefillin on Yontif. Now again, whether that's true and why that's true is a whole separate discussion, but l'maisa, we know that we don't wear tefillin on Yontif. So the question is, so what right did Rav Sheshes have to allow the rabbis to send tefillin? So the Gemara says, no, hachi kamar, kol shenei osin bo b'chol, mishalchen oso b'yantif. What the Mishnah really meant to say was, anything which you can use during the week, meaning to say it's functional, it's usable, you can send on Yontif. So even though you're not really allowed to wear tefillin on Yontif for, again, a variety of reasons, but l'maisa, the tefillin are wearable, functional, usable. They're not mukta in the sense that they're not usable, as opposed to, let's say, a white shoe or a non-polished shoe or a non-stitched shoe, which is just completely not functional, that's what you're not allowed to send. Then the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Tfilin ho ova asu li yada neima behu milsa. Abaye is like, oh, now that you've mentioned tfilin, let's say some halachos about tfilin. Haya baba derech usulin berosho, vishaka alachama, meiniach yadu aleim ad shemagia leveso. Haya yoshe bevesa medrish usulin berosho, vikidesh alavayo, meiniach yadu aleim ad shemagia leveso. So again, basically the Gemara says, let's say you're either traveling on the road or you're sitting in the base medrish and it's late Friday afternoon or it's late Yontif afternoon and you're wearing your tefillin, and you realize that you're not going to make it home before Shabbos or Yontif begins. So the Gemara says what you should do is you should place your hand over your tefillin until you get either to the house until you get back to your house, or again, and that's true whether you're traveling or whether you're in the base madrash. So the Gemara asks, Masif Ravuna Bere de Ravika, Hayabav Aderech Usfilin Berosho, Vekidesh Alav Hayom, Miniach Yadu Alein Ad Shemagia Levayas Asamach Lechoma, Hayayoshim Beves HaMedrash, Vekidesh Alav Hayom, Miniach Yadu Alein Ad Shemagia Levayas Asamach Leves HaMedrash. The problem is that this brisa that Ravuna quotes actually says not that you can bring the tefillin all the way back to your house, but rather that you have to drop them off at the first house of the city, or the house closest to the base medrash, depending on the case. So which one is it? Am I allowed to take my tefillin all the way back to my house, or do I have to drop it off at the nearest house? So the Gemara says, Lokashia, ha de mintera, ha de lo mintera. It depends if the tefillin are going to be guarded. In other words, if the tefillin are going to be protected when you drop them off in the house that's closest into the city or the base medrash, then you have no right to take them back to your house. But if by leaving them in that house that's right by the edge of the city or next to the base medrash, they're just going to be left there and someone could come steal them or something like that, so then the halacha is that you could take them all the way back to your house. So then the Gemara says, The problem is, says the Gemara, if the case is that the tefillin are not protected, that they're, that there's a chance that they could be stolen, for example, so then this case is basically underselling the halacha, because the halacha is that not only am I allowed to wear tefillin and get it back home, on Shabbos or Yontif to make sure it's protected, but the Mishnah at the end of Erevin says, let's say I'm walking out in the field on Shabbos or Yontif, and I find a pair of tefillin lying on the ground, the Mishnah says you're allowed to carry those tefillin back into the city to make sure they're protected. So if the whole issue here is a problem of the tefillin not being guarded, not being protected, so why are we only formulating the case as one where I'm wearing the tefillin and carrying it back to my house? I can even go to the field and pick up the tefillin from the ground. So why is the Gemara presenting it like this? So the Gemara says, no, lokasha, ha de mintura machmas ganve u machmas kalve, ha de mintura machmas kalve velo mintura machmas ganve, mao de sema rov listim yisrael ninu velo mazalz lebuhu kamash malan. The Gemara says the following, that the distinction is as follows. In one case, the tefillin are completely protected. They're not only protected from bandits, from thieves, they're even protected from wild animals, from dogs, in other words, in one case, the tefillin are completely 100% protected from anything and everything happening to the tefillin. However, in the other case, the tefillin are only protected from the dogs, from wild animals, attacking it, but they're not necessarily protected from bandits coming to steal the tefillin. Why does that make a difference? Why is that distinction significant? So the Gemara says, because one could have argued that since the majority of bandits are Jews, so one could have thought that, okay, they're not going to be so mezalzel in tefillin. A guy may be a thief, but he doesn't have the chutzpah to steal your tefillin. Comes the Gemara and says, no, it's not true. Kamash malon, that even that is a problem. In other words, we are concerned that he may come to take your tefillin, and therefore you're allowed to bring it all the way back to Again, this says a lot about the psychology of a person. A person could be a thief and yet still somehow care about tefillin, but that's kind of a discussion that's more of like a Musar discussion. But the bottom line is that the Gemara says is that in this context, something could be protected, let's say, from the animals, but not necessarily from a thief. And again, the Chiddush being that one could have argued that since this person maybe doesn't care about, in other words, the person will not be mezalzel in the mitzvah tefillin, so kamash below in the note that we're not concerned for that. Okay, that's fine. So Hajra Lech Beisa. So we finished the first parak, and now we're going to move on to a Yontif topic, which is not really relevant this year. It's about Erev Tavshilin, so it is relevant in other years, but in this particular year, it's not so relevant. So the Mishnah says, Yontif Shechol Yos Erev Shabbos, Lo Yivashel Betchila Miyontof L'Shabbos, Aval Mevashel Hu Liyontof Im Hoser L'Shabbos. So first, the Mishnah starts out with the following. If you have a Yontif that falls out on a Friday, so you're not allowed to cook on Yontif for Shabbos, But you can cook for Yontif, and if there's a food left over for Shabbos, that's okay. However, the Mishnah says, "V'oset tavshil me'erev yontov v'somech alav l'Shabbos." This is what we do today. This is making an erev tavshilin. You make your erev tavshilin. Again, the Gemara is going to discuss all the details in a second. You make your erev tavshilin on erev yontif, and you can then rely on that to cook on yontif for Shabbos. Then the Mishnah says, "V'shama yomrim shnei tavshilin v'yisel yomrim tavshil achad." You have a technical machlokes. How many dishes do you require for your erev tavshilin? V'shama say you need to have two. V'yisel say even one is okay. V'shavin bedag uveitza she'alav shein shnei tavshilin. But everyone agrees that if you have, let's say, a fish and there's an egg that you smeared on the fish, that qualifies as two separate dishes. Then the Mishnah says, "Ach lo she'avad lo yivashal alav betchila v'im shir menu koshu somech alav l'Shabbos." Let's say either the erev, let's say someone ate the erev tavshilin, or the erev tavshilin was lost. So then you're really not supposed to rely on that. You really are not allowed to cook anymore on yontif for Shabbos. But if even a little bit of the erev tavshilin remains, then that's okay. Then you can still rely on that to cook on yontif for Shabbos. So the Gemara wants to know, what's the basis? What's the source for this idea of an Erev Tavshilin? Now, obviously, we know that Erev Tavshilin is only a Din D'Rabbanan, so we're not looking for a real source Midoraisa here, but it's more like a Remez, like an Asmachta. Where is there an allusion in the Torah to the concept of Erev Tavshilin? So the Gemara says, "Amar Shmuel d'Amar Kra, Zachor es Yom HaShabbos l'Kadisho, Zachreyu me'achar Shabbala HaShkicho." Very, very interesting drasha. Shmuel says, based on the Pasuk Zachor es Yom HaShabbos l'Kadisho, from the Aseres HaDibros, so Shmuel interprets the Pasuk to mean that you should remember Shabbos at a time when you're prone to forgetting it. What does that mean? Basically, on Yontif, the fear is that you're so preoccupied with the fact that it's Yontif that you're going to forget about the fact that it's Shabbos. So according to Shmuel, the Erev Tavshilin is basically a reminder, don't forget that tomorrow is Shabbos. That's really what it is. So the Gemara says, "My time." So what's the reasoning, what's the logic behind this? Amar Rava, kidei sheyivur mana yafel l'Shabbos u'mana yafel l'Yomtif. According to Rava, the purpose of an Erev Tavshilin is basically that you shouldn't get shortchanged on Shabbos. In other words, that just as you're having good food for Yontif, you should also have good food set aside for Shabbos as well. However, Rav Ashi Amar Kadesha Yomru ain't ofen miyontof l'Shabbos kal v'chomer miyontof l'chol. However, Rav Ashi says that no, that the reason why we insist on an Erev Tavshilin is almost to highlight the significance of Yontif. In other words, if a person is going to see that they're really not allowed to cook or bake on Yontif for Shabbos without this mechanism of the Erev Tavshilin, they're going to realize and say, obviously I'm not allowed to cook on Yontif for a weekday. In other words, if even for Shabbos I have to go through this whole crazy, you know, Erev Tavshilin to allow me to cook, then kal v'chomer I can't cook on Yontif for Chol. So it's almost like, according to Rav Ashi, the idea of an Erev Tavshilin is almost reinforcing the Kedusha of Yontif. It's fine. The Gemara says, Tanan, Oset Tavshil me'erev Yontov v'somech alav l'Shabbos. We said in the Mishnah that you basically prepare your Erev Tavshilin on Erev Yontif, and then you can rely on that to bake and to cook on Yontif for Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, Bishlam al Rav Ashi d'amar k'dei she'yom ro'ein ofen mi Yontif l'Shabbos hainu d'me Erev Yontif in bi Yontif lo el l'Rava my nami. So I understand, according to Rav Ashi, the reason why you have to make your Erev Tavshilin dafka on Erev Yontif and not on Yontif itself, because the whole point is to reinforce the Kedusha of Yontif. So it makes a lot of sense. I need to make my Erev Tavshilin before Yontif. I can't make it on Yontif, because that would undermine the whole point of reinforcing the Kedusha of Yontif. But according to Rava, again, remember, Rava was the one who said that the whole point of the Erev Tavshilin was just to have good food for Yontif and for Shabbos. So then why can't I make my Erev Tavshilin on Yontif itself? I can still have good food on Yontif and Shabbos by making the Erev Tavshilin on Yontif. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Really, you're right. According to Rava, technically, we should have been able to make the Erev Tavshilin on Yontif. Just the fear is that we're afraid that, you know, a person's going to be negligent, they're going to forget to do it, whatever it is. So, you know, for that reason, we insist that you do it on Erev Yontif. And the Gemara says, "V'sana ma'isei lamehacha." Tana quotes a pasuk from Parshas Bishalach that says, and this is the context of the man, "Esa sher tofu efu ve'esa sher tevashalu bashelu mikan amar Rabbi Elazar in ofen ela al ha'afwe ve'in mevashlin ela al mevushal mikan samchuchach." This pasuk is a remez for the idea of Erev Tavshilin. In other words, the pasuk discusses how Bnei Yisrael, after they got the mud, they could bake it, they could cook it. Again, there are different processes that could be used for processing and for making the mud edible. So basically, the Gemara derives this pasuk is a remez to the notion of an Erev Tavshilin. Okay.
Then, here I am on the second day of Yontif, of the 3-day Yontif, and Shabbos the next day.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot. And I got a challah roll and an egg that I'm sitting there anyway, and all I'm doing is saying a bracha. Right? I mean,
Wait, Billy, what's the case here? You're asking, what's the issue?
I didn't make my Erev Tavshilin.
I forgot to make the Erev Tavshilin. Yeah, so no.
I'm now on the second day of Yontif, and the 3-day Yontif.
And you
here's my challah roll and here's my egg. It's already That just happens to be there because that's what I was eating anyway.
You're saying that you didn't designate it beforehand? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't do anything.
Okay, so again, if you're asking from a halacha lemaisa standpoint, this is a whole separate discussion. If a person forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin, if you could rely on the Rav's Erev Tavshilin, that's a whole separate issue. But yeah, but in other words, if you're asking just in terms of the halachic perspective, so the issue in general, let's say there was no Erev Tavshilin at all. So what's the issue with baking and cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos? Normally you say Ochel Nefesh is mutter, right? But Ochel Nefesh is only mutter for that day, right? That's the reason why, for example, you have to wait till Yom Tov Rishon is over before you start praying for Yom Tov Sheni, because you get right. So it's the same thing. So Yom Tov, in other words, that's the whole point of the Gemara, is that you can't bake or cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos without the Erev Tavshilin, right? So again, that's the reason why we have it. You have to figure out what's the reason, what's the logic behind it. Is it, you know, to have good food on both days? Is it to preserve the Kedusha of Yom Tov? That was the Machlokas in the Gemara. Okay, fine. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Maisa b'Rabbi Eliezer shehaya yoshe v'doresh kol hayom kulo b'hilchos Yom Tov. So Rabbi Eliezer was sitting around, I guess it was an Erev Yom Tov, and it was on Yom Tov itself, and he was expounding upon all the halachos of Yom Tov. Kas Rishona Amar Halalu Bali Pitasin. So Kashniya Amar Halalu Bali Chavios. Kashlisha Amar Halalu Bali Kadin. Kas Revia Amar Halalu Bali Laginin. Kas Chamisha Amar Halalu Bali Kosos. Hischilu Kas Shishas Latzes Amar Halalu Bali Meira. Basically, there were several groups of people at the shir, and slowly they started to kind of filter out in the middle of the shir. So the first group that left, Rabbi Elazar commented about them. They're Bali Pitasin. These are guys who have these gigantic, huge jugs, barrels. You know these gigantic things of wine at home, and presumably they have the same amount of food. These are like the wealthy guys who had tons of wine, tons of food at home. They wanted to get home nice and early so they could spend their yontif eating and drinking and really enjoying themselves. Then the second group, so they had slightly less. They only had the chavios, which are like regular sized barrels. Then the third group, they only had kadin, which are like jars or jugs. And the fourth group, legidin, right? Sorry, the legidin are the jars. And the fifth group had just cups. Again, it was basically going down a level of wealth. And then finally, as the sixth group was about to leave, Rabbi Eliezer said, these guys are the Bale Me'era. They're cursed. In other words, they don't have anything. These guys have nothing. So the Gemara says, Nasan Eino Besalmidim, Hischilu Penamishtan. And so when he started looking at his students who were still left in the shir, their faces started to change colors. They were embarrassed. He thought that he was mocking their poverty or whatever it was. So Amar Levi said, No, Banai Lola Chemani Omer Allah Halalu Sheyatsu, Shemanichin Chayolam Vauske Mechaisha. Rabbi Eliezer says, I'm not berating you guys for not having any money. He says, I'm giving mustard to the guys who left. He says, oh, those guys, they left early to go imbibe and eat and drink, and you guys all stayed here to be osek, to engage in learning Torah. The Gemara says, b'shas p'tirasan amar lehem, l'chu ichlu mishmanim u'shesu mamtakim, mishelchu manos le'ina chonlo, ki kadosh hayom ladoneinu, ve'al te'atzevu, ki chedvas Hashem hima uzechem. As they were leaving, so he cited this pasuk from Sefer Nehemiah. The pasuk says, go and eat your delicacies and drink all of your good wines and drinks, and send gifts to those who don't have, for today is a holy day for Hashem, and don't be upset because today is the day of rejoicing. So the Gemara is going to explain this right now. So Amar Mar, how could Rabbi Eliezer, berate all these guys who left the shir early by saying, oh, you guys are all just, busy imbibing in your food and wine, but what about the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif? Maybe they were going to do a mitzvah, so that's why they left the shir early. The Gemara says, no. Rabbi Eliezer letame, the Amar Simchas Yontif Rishos, the Sanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ein lo la'adam biyom tov ela o ochel v'shosa o yoshe v'shone, Rabbi Yoshua Omer chalkeu, chetziu la'ashem v'chetziu lachem. So a famous machluk, we actually spoke about back in Maseches Pesachim, famous machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua regarding the nature of the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. According to Rabbi Eliezer, Yontif is basically an either all or nothing, basically all or nothing. In other words, either you spend the whole day eating and drinking, the whole day, enjoying yourself, or you spend the whole day learning Torah. There's no in between, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yoshua says no. Rabbi Yoshua says you have to divide it. Half the day you learn, you daven, and half the day you eat and you drink. And the Gemara points out, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ushneim Yikra Echad Darshu. Both of these opinions are derived from the same pasuk. So we seem to have a contradiction in Pesukim. On the one hand, the Torah says that Shavuos is for Hashem. On the other hand, it says that Shavuos is for you. So Haketzad, which one is it? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer Savar, O Kulo Lashem, O Kulo Lachem. Rabbi Yoshua Savar, Chalkeu, Chetzu Lashem, Chetzu Lachem. That's the Machlokas. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's either all or nothing. Either it's all for you or all for Hashem. According to Rabbi Yoshua, you have to divide the debt. Then the Gemara wants to know, Mai Le'ein Nachum, going back to the pasuk from Nehemiah that Rabbi Eliezer cited, what does it mean when he said that you're going to send gifts to those who don't have? Amar Chista l'mishalo hiniachei ruvi tavshilin. It refers to a person who didn't prepare their erev tavshilin. In other words, they didn't have enough. They were not able to prepare food on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So you should send them. them some food to have for Shabbos. Ika damre, misha lo hayalo lahaniach eruvi tavshilin. Aval misha hayalo lahaniach eruvi tavshilin v'lo hiniach posheyahu. The other version of the Gemara is that that allowance that Rabbi Eliezer said that you could send food to those guys, that's only if basically they either forgot to make an eruv tavshilin or they just didn't get around to it. But if they could have made an eruv tavshilin, they purposely failed to do so, then you have no obligation to help them out. Then the Gemara says, Maiki chedvas Hashem hima uzachem. That was the last part of the pasuk from Nehemiah, that, you know, today is a day of rejoicing for Hashem. Amr Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Reb Shimon Amr Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Banai Levu Alai V'Kidshu Kiddush HaSayom V'Aminu Bi V'Ani Poreya. Hashem basically says to Bnei Yisrael, he says, you should escort me, and you should sanctify today as a holy day, and you should believe in me that I'm going to pay you back, which we'll see in a second what that means. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Shimon Harotze sheyiskaimu nechasav yita ban eder sheneemar adir bamarom Hashem. The Gemara says, if a person wants their possessions to last, you should plant this tree known as an eder tree. Again, I don't know exactly what kind of tree this is. You should plant this thing called an eder tree in your field, and that'll ensure that your possessions last. And the Gemara, you know, uses a pasuk from Tehillim, the famous pasuk we say in the Yom Friday, Adir Bamarom Hashem. The word Adir means strength, and it's similar to the word Eder. So if you want your possessions to last, you should plant this Eder tree in your field. And the Gemara says, Inami, Idra Kishmei, Kida Amre Inche, my Idra, the Kaimi Ladari. Dari, another pshat is that the word Idra comes from the word door, generations. In other words, that if you plant this tree, then your possessions, your wealth will last for generations. Tani Nami Hachi, Sada Sheishba Eder, Eina Nigzelas, Veina Nechmeses, Uferu Samishtamrin. If you have a field that has this Eder tree, it's not going to be stolen, no one's going to extort the field, your fruits are going to be guarded, they're going to be protected. So again, it sounds like a good thing if you want your wealth to be preserved to plant this Eder tree. And then finally, we end off with a very timely Gemara. Tani Rav Tachlifa Achua de Rav Nai Chuzah. Kol mizonosov shel adam ketuvim lo me'rosh Hashanah ve'ad yom ha'kipurim chutz me'otzas shabbosos ha'otzas yantiv ve'otzas banav l'sal metorosh and piches pochsin lo v'em hosif mosifo. A very famous Gemara. Also, the Gemara says that basically, you know, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides what your wealth is going to be and how much you're going to make for the whole year, with the exception of the money that you spend for Shabbos, for yantiv, and for sending your kids to go learn Torah, where basically everything is a separate cheshbon. And that those three areas, Hashem says, if you spend extra, I'm gonna reimburse you. Amar Rabbi Avo, Mikra, what's the source for that? Tiku v'chod ha-shofar ba-kesel yom chageinu. A famous pasuk we say about Rosh Hashanah, right? To blow the shofar on kesel yom chageinu, which we know is an allusion to Rosh Hashanah, right? Eze huchag she'achodesh miskasebo heveyomer zeh Rosh Hashanah, right? So we know Rosh Hashanah is the only yontif that occurs on the first of the month, and it's a yontif that occurs when the moon is concealed on the first of the month. Uchseh, the pasuk goes on to say, ki chok li Yisrael hu mishpat le'lokei Yaakov. That it's a chok, right? So usually we think of a chok as like a statute, a law without a reason. Reasoning. However, in this context, as we'll see in a second, the word chok is an allusion to a portion, to, in other words, to something, almost like a stipend that you get. My mashma dahai chok lishna demizoni. How do we know that the word chok implies, you know, basically a stipend? The chsev a pasuk from Parshas Vayigash, va'achelu es chukam asher nasan lohem paro. That the shvatim, I'm sorry, this is the end of Parshas Mikitz, when the people of Mitzrayim were eating the stipends, the food that were given to them by paro. Marzutra amarei hacha, shrifini lechem chuki. Marzutra quotes a pasuk from Mishlei that says, you know, that we ask Hashem to give us our stipend of bread, or stipend of food. So that's the source that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reimburses us for money that we spend for Shabbos, for Yontif, and for sending your kids to go learn Torah.